Good morning and welcome to World Report. And this morning we hear from the Czech Republic, where dependence on Russian gas is threatening the 300-year-old glass-blowing industry, among others. We go to Lebanon to meet an Irish priest who is giving aid and education to the children of Syrians who fled their country's brutal civil war. But first today to Zimbabwe, where a measles outbreak has killed more than 700 children. And the death toll is still climbing. After COVID-19, this outbreak is the most deadly public health crisis since the cholera epidemic of 2008. And just like that crisis, the measles outbreak comes at a time of growing economic hardships. Ryan Truscott has more.
This very serious measles outbreak was first reported in April in Mutasa District in Zimbabwe's mountainous Manicaland province. The first to contract the disease were children whose parents belonged to a number of religious sects, collectively known as the Apostolic Church. The church has its origins in the 1950s. Its members are best recognized for the white robes they wear and the fact that they often meet in the open, even within cities and towns. Many of its members shun modern medicine, preferring, for example, home births to hospital births, and traditionally they have not brought their children to government clinics for early vaccinations against diseases like measles, mumps and rubella. In the last 4 months, the deaths from measles have steadily increased. This week the toll passed 700. According to official figures, 37 children were reported dead from the disease on a single day on September the 1st. Measles is contagious, so the church's annual pilgrimages in July and August appear to have sadly only worsened the spread. Critics say some of the blame should lie with the government for treading too softly with apostolic churches on the vaccination issue, because of the way these churches have helped the ruling party to win elections. One of this year's pilgrimages to Mafararikwa was even attended by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Like his late predecessor Robert Mugabe, Mnangagwa put on the white robes of the Yohane Marangi sect and carried the wooden staff that its men carry. A state newspaper, the Manica Post, estimates the event was attended by 100,000 pilgrims. Sources close to the aid community say it may not be entirely fair to insist Mnangagwa's government calls out apostolics for refusing vaccinations. There was definitely a warming up to COVID-19 vaccines among some apostolic churches in Manicaland, including the Johann V of Africa International Church, led by Bishop Anbi Makururu. It may be that the softly approach, including from international donors, is calculated to persuade behind the scenes, as the Ministry of Health and partners like UNICEF work on a mass vaccination campaign aimed at reaching 6 million children. Doctors Without Borders has tweeted pictures of its staff administering the oral vaccines to long queues of children in a number of districts in Manicaland province, still the worst hit of Zimbabwe's 10 provinces. The tragedy of this outbreak comes as the economic crisis here worsens, marked by inflation of 285%. A loaf of bread now costs up to 900 Zimbabwe dollars, up from $1 in 2016. The country is losing its skilled workers like nurses, just when they're needed most. Last year, 1,800 nurses left for the UK, where salaries are 10 times higher than the €180 or so equivalent that nurses get paid here. There are echoes of the past. In 2008, hyperinflation reached more than 200 million% as a cholera epidemic swept through the country, killing more than 4,000 people. The country was just emerging from a violent and disputed election campaign that had returned the late Mugabe, then already in his 80s, to power, although his powers were later constrained by a political deal with the late opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai. Things are hotting up ahead of next year's elections. The main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, led by Nelson Chamisa, says its members are frequently stopped from campaigning in rural areas, though it has just won 2 seats in a council by-election in the Western Bulilima district. Political tensions, a depreciating currency, and a public health crisis. These are all creating a terrible sense of deja vu for many in the country. For World Report in Harare, Zimbabwe, this is Ryan Truscott.
Next to the Czech Republic, where the traditional glass-blowing industry has survived many a crisis, The Bohemian Mountains area of the country has been the heartland of glass production for hundreds of years. The industry has come through two world wars, Nazi prosecution of Jewish workers, and state control. But after something of a boon, could the industry's reliance on imported gas from Russia be its undoing? Isabel Conway has the story.
Few industries can look back to the year 1712 and still operate, much as they would have done that long ago. The world's oldest functioning glass factory at Harrachov, that takes its name from the count who ruled this district of mountainous North Bohemia in the Czech Republic, turns out hand-blown glass using blowpipes and traditional moulds carved out of beechwood. Luxurious drinkware, decorative and everyday glass and crystal chandeliers are this renowned glassworks' mainstay. Back in the old days, furnaces burnt wood from the surrounding forests to turn out the finest Bohemian glass. Nowadays, solely dependent on gas piped out of Russia, the Czech Republic's traditional glassmaking industry finds itself not just in deep trouble, but in crisis. Costs at Harrachov have risen 1,000% since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And it's the same story elsewhere, here at the centre of Czech glass production. Last summer, the world's oldest glassworks were paying 26 euros per megawatt hour for Russian gas to fuel their furnaces that must be kept to a constant temperature. The price has now skyrocketed to 310 euros an hour, explains the sales manager Jan Hayek. It's a critical situation. Our order books luckily were full, and foreign customers up to now accept the increases we've had to pass on to them. Our largest foreign market is the United States. If we've to put the prices up again, it might shut us down. Watching the molten glass, shaped beside the fierce heat of the kilns here at the heart of Czech traditional glassmaking, it's unthinkable that the current energy crisis could smash this ancient craft to smithereens. 80 staff are employed here, including the same families for generations. Nobody knows if the factory will still be in business a month from now, says Hayek. We watch a hive of activity below in the sweltering glass production hall. Workers inserting long pipes into the blazing fires of the furnaces. The semi-liquid blobs shaped by the glass blowers, stems added with hand tools before the glass is taken to be cooled down during this painstaking labour-intensive process. If Putin decides to shut down the pipeline that carries the gas used to melt their glass, it's the end of them, Hayek fears. A landlocked country without any option to receive shipped natural gas, the Czech Republic is connected by pipeline directly to Russia's gas fields. It's sold on to them by Germany at four times, allegedly, what the Germans are paying Russia, a cause of ever-growing resentment in the Czech Republic. Our government should be much tougher and more decisive, says Paul Kobajek, chairman of the Union of Glass Jewellery Producers. We export nuclear and also coal-based electricity ourselves, sold at auction, and it's making huge profit, whilst our glass industry is on its knees. Those profits should be used to support glass production in this ongoing gas energy crisis here, to prevent its collapse. It should take millions to convert the Harrachov glassworks to electricity, and the company says that even if it was feasible, they couldn't afford the necessary extra investment now. Once a cheap and convenient energy source, gas supplanted the wood fuel that long ago drew the glassmakers to these forested hills. There's no going back to wood, though, because Czech forests are strictly preserved. Compared with this crisis, other difficulties pale, like that of keeping their staff of craftspeople topped up with young recruits, including future glassblowers and engravers at the world's oldest glassworks. The Czech glass industry has survived many a past crisis and numerous challenges during two world wars here at the centre of Europe. Jablonec's community of 300 Jewish families were the mainstay of glass jewellery's worldwide fame and prosperity in its heyday after the First World War. In one of the town's squares, a granite memorial stands at the spot where their synagogue was desecrated and destroyed by the Nazis in October 1938. Most members of the Jewish community were murdered in Nazi concentration camps. May their memory be blessed, reads the inscription dedicated to those families who contributed much to the glass industry before World War II. It's a cruel irony that our destiny is once more in the hands of a dictator, now from Russia, says a businessman who remembers how the Soviet state controlled Czechoslovakia's glass industry prior to 1989 and privatisation. For World Report, this is Isabel Conway in North Bohemia, the Czech Republic.
And finally, to Lebanon, now home to many Syrians who fled their country during the long years of the Syrian civil war. Many live in extreme poverty in Lebanon, and that's where Clontarf native and Rosminian priest Father William Stewart comes in. He runs a Christian school in South Lebanon, a haven for Syrians and their children. Hannah McCarthy visited him at the school and sent us this report.
The sound of children reciting the alphabet echoes through the halls as I sit down with Father William Stewart. I'm in his office at the school he runs in Tyre in South Lebanon. The school is based in a rented two-story building, a short drive from the sandy coastline and Roman ruins that tourists often visit. Since the civil war in Syria began over a decade ago, Tyre has become home to thousands of Syrians who fled the fighting and Bashar al-Assad's brutal onslaught against his own citizen. Now, countless Syrian children, who've never been to Syria, work on the streets to earn money for their families. Since 2018, Father Stewart has been trying to convince these children and their parents to let them go to school. Originally from Clontarf, the priest joined the Rosminian Order in the 70s. He's the youngest Irish member of the order, and he admits the future is bleak. After a career spent mostly working at the School for the Blind in Dublin, he went to Syria in 2003 and was in the country when violence began in 2011. His experience in Syria would eventually lead him to set up a school in South Lebanon for Syrian refugees. Many of the school's pupils would have been poor and marginalised in Syria, but here in Lebanon they're displaced as well. Over 90% of Syrians in Lebanon live in extreme poverty. What does extreme poverty look like? It means children often arrive at the school for the first time hungry, unwashed, and with rotting teeth. UNICEF, the UN agency for children, provides hygiene training at the school, and thanks to donations from parishes in Ireland like Clontarf and Greystones, the children have sets of clean clothes too. Father Stewart says his first hour at school is often spent phoning the parents of pupils who haven't turned up, asking where they are. He describes Ibrahim, a boy who used to attend the school before his father took him out to sweep a floor in a local garage. He now earns about $5 a month for his family. Another boy, Hassan, attends the school some days. His mother sends him out early every morning to sell bottles of water. His tiny frame lugs around litre bottles of water, a dozen at a time. Someone once gave him a 5 euro note, says Father Stewart. He went to the local money changer because he couldn't count and he had no idea what the money was worth. That's how compromised a little boy like that is on the street, he says. For children, the school is a safe environment, in sharp contrast to their home life or working on the streets. The teachers at the school deliver a special program that focuses on English, Arabic and maths. After that, social skills, sport and hygiene are the main focus. The school simply doesn't have the resources to focus on subjects like science. To reach as many children as possible, the school operates two shifts a day. The first shift starts at 12 p.m. and the second shift starts at 4 p.m. Unfortunately, the rapidly increasing cost of fuel in Lebanon means that the school is now running 4 days a week instead of five. The savings on fuel for the school bus has allowed another 50 children to attend classes. The war in Ukraine has also affected funding for the school. And rightly so, says Father Stewart, they're running from war. But the priest is dismayed by how easy it was for Ireland to support what he calls white, blue-eyed Europeans, and yet unable to accommodate 4,000 Syrians over the last decade. It's an indicator of how fairly we divide the world, he says. My time with Father Stewart and his school ends with a little sermon about what the Irish priest describes as the two pillars of Christianity, ritual and service to the poor. We're very good at ritual, he says. We welcome people at baptism, we marry, we ordain, we anoint them when they're sick and we feed them the Eucharist. We're all very familiar with that. But people sublet the other pillar, what he calls the cry of the poor, to charities and other agencies. The command of Jesus is the only one we will be judged by, says Father Stewart. Did you give water to the thirsty? Did you clothe the naked? Did you stand in solidarity with the sick and the imprisoned and those on the margins? If that isn't your priority, then it makes the liturgy and the ritual a nonsense, he says. For World Report and Tyr, I'm Hannah McCarthy.
And that's it from World Report for today. If you want to listen back to this morning's stories, go to rte.ie/World Report. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. Back next week with more stories. But until then, from me, Carol Coleman, and the team, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.